penalty because...
That has to be the issue.
Mm-hmm. And the same with the amendment on the second page that was submitted to you last week. The harshness of the penalty for the woman that was embarrassed to continue working and wanted to look for a new job. She could have continued working for, I think it was another week, but she wanted to, you know, move and be on her way. And both of these people not thinking that they were going to be collecting unemployment benefits. I mean, there's no, I mean, just if they were advised, if they knew the consequences of their act, you know, you would say, no matter what, stick it out for the extra week and then get your benefits. It just seems a harsh price to pay.
Okay. Representative Johnson.
Would you settle for just the amendments that say that required the notice you proposed and one of your other amendments?
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
There were some amendments proposed that I assume you proposed that would require a printed statement. Plain language of the potential disqualification penalties to voluntary leave and discharge.
Well, I think that you could probably remedy a great a number of the problems if people knew the consequences of not staying for the remaining period of time. I haven't thought about putting it in that way.
You haven't thought about settling for that as a remedy to, rather than all of this?
Frankly, I hadn't thought about it.
Okay.
Okay, let me ask the Employment Division. I assume that you're perhaps incorrectly, that your impact statement was prepared in anticipation that the original amendment was aimed at both circumstances? No. Okay. That's, looks like we got another fiscal impact statement. Go ahead and just... Ms. Paulson indicates that she perhaps had provided you with a copy of this amendment. Now, I don't know if you can respond at this point, but if you can, feel free.
Mr. Chairman, Ron Aaron, Employment Division. The impact statement that is headed up BQ in anticipation of a discharge was just the amendment that the committee heard about a week ago because we were not aware of the other proposal at the time. We have not had, since we just got on this very late last week, we did not have an impact statement on the quit in anticipation of a quit.
Okay, so there will be a need for an additional amended impact statement. Okay, how about the language of the amendment itself? Does that pose any? And apparently, there's also a technical or typographical correction was made to the original amendment that was provided, which is on page 2 of this latest information from Ms. Paulson. Does the language, as it's stated, generally? Something you can work with and live with if it's adopted as a matter of policy.
So what happened is I accidentally left out Bill's line somewhere in here, but that was Bill's language. It was the making it run from week to week so he didn't have the half week problem.
Okay. So this now jives with what we
that
wrote.
What you wrote. Yes.
Okay. It looks like the. This draft now coincides with the language we drafted earlier.
Okay. Well, I don't expect an authoritative answer today because since we will be coming back, you know, and if you, on further consideration, you suggest some amendment or see anything you want to discuss with us, that's fine. Let me ask members of the committee if they have any questions at this point.
One and that was needed. On the Green case, was that a union shop or non-union shop or what?
I don't believe the union was involved. I mean, I don't know. One question, did you want me to try for language that would deal with some sort of notification? That
we've already got that language. Yeah. It was the Employment Division that prepared that amendment, and maybe they can share a copy with you. They presented that to us, I think, on the 11th as well, in response to a question or a request raised earlier by a member. Representative Hanlon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tell us the underlying assumptions you used in preparing the fiscal statement we have here.
Yeah. we projected the total denials on voluntary leaving to be 13,650. We used a 5% figure that would fit into this particular situation, and that was an estimate, because we don't track it at that detail level. What we did was call a number of our offices and ask them for their estimate, and the range ran from 5 to 10%, and we took the smaller number. So we 5% is a soft number. So that left a total of 683 potentially impacted, and of those, we estimate 80% would not requalify under the 4 times a week benefit amount. So it left a total of 546 individuals for 1984. Total compensated weeks of 8,736. That's an average of 16 weeks per claim. We use an average check amount of $130. So the total amount of benefits for 1984 came to $1,135,680. So say $1.1 million. We did that through the other 4 years, that same approach. The average compensated weeks vary by year, as does average check amount. And projected denials all changed by week, by year.
Representative Hanlon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Paulson, do you have any knowledge, at least from working out of your office, of whether or not the 5% figure quoted by Mr. Nairn is high or low?
I couldn't tell you. I don't know.
Mr. Nairn, would you consider the 5% basically your best estimate, but nonetheless pretty soft so far as estimating the impact?
The 5%, Representative Hanlon, I think is soft. I would think it tends to be soft on a conservative side.
Thank you.
Okay, any further questions? Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Nairn, I wanted to get how you got to the 5% figure. Was it by looking at it, reviewing a number of cases, and coming up with a percentage out of that? Or
we, Representative Leek, we talked to a number of employees of the division who do this kind of work all the time, asked them for an estimate on what they considered. The range that we got from the varied from 5 to 10%, and that was by calling a number of our different local offices, because we don't have the figures at that level of detail. Since they ran from 5 to 10%, we took the 5% figure, and we'd be conservative rather than the other way. So,
okay, now the 5% figure is 5% of the total number of claims.
No, 5% of the total number of voluntary quit denials.
5%
of the total number of voluntary quit denials.
Okay, and your assumption is that 5% of the total voluntary quit denials are people who fall into this situation where they've got another job,
mm-hmm,
that
right,
they're looking at, and they quit in advance, and then the other job isn't there.
Right. Our estimate of the situation that would fall into this category of a discharge or of a scenario where someone would be have been notified of discharge would total the total population 1984 of that situation would be 13,650. Of those, we estimate 5% of those would quit in anticipation of the discharge.
Okay, now, I understand that, the 5% would quit in anticipation of discharge. Now, of that 5% that would quit in anticipation of discharge, you're assuming that 100% are not quitting because they got another job, but they're just quitting in anticipation of discharge? In other words, of that 5% figure then, are not a large number of them got, don't a large number of them have another job that they assume that they're getting down the pike? Which is the situation that's being described here.
Okay, I think what, I think we almost have to go back square one where we're looking at projected VQ denials on this. Now, the ones that had another job and went directly to it would be excluded from this population.
Okay, support. I understand that, but you look at a population that 5% of your voluntary quits again were what, 13,650?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you're assuming and the ones that go directly to another job aren't coming into your system at all.
Right.
You never know about them. So 13,650 is the total universe we're dealing with. Now you're assuming that 5% of that number are people who quit before another job comes along in anticipation of another job, and that none of those people are going to get the other job, and therefore they're going to begin drawing benefits.
That's not quite okay. Correct, Representative Leek. This would be a situation where someone would say, let's say on a Monday, they would say, this, you know, we're going to wind this job up on Friday, and we're going to have to let everybody go.
Okay.
And so a certain number of people would leave early.
5% would leave early. Is what you're guessing, somewhere between 5 and 10% based on what your discussions you were.
5% of total population.
So somewhere between, you know, you're saying that 13,650, that 1,365 people would make the decision to leave early.
5%.
Or I'm sorry, that's 10%. That's 5%. That's 700 people would decide to leave early.
Let me, if we're having a little trouble here, it might be easier if we ask you folks to maybe discuss the questions at issue among yourselves, and then maybe be prepared to come back with a more complete written statement.
I guess my concern is that what I'm hearing is this impact is based on the total number of people that put themselves in this voluntary quit situation without anticipating any of them are indeed going to have any work following week, but yeah, I'd be glad to discuss this with them.
Okay, why don't you try to respond generally, but as far as any more specific questions, why don't we let you try to thresh that out yourselves rather than taking more time here in committee. Go ahead.
Okay, just generally speaking, we ask our local offices, out of all the people that are denied benefits because they quit their jobs and they are denied benefits, we did a sample one time, personality conflicts, dissatisfied with their pay. There's a number of different patterns that they fall into, and we called up a number of our experienced claims supervisors that review these decisions, and we said, out of all the people that get denied benefits for quitting, what percentage of those get denied benefits because they quit their job a few days early, a week or so early, because they were going to be discharged? And out of those, out of all the denied quitters, 5% of them were this population group who left their job early. And it would have nothing to do with whether they had another job lined up or not. They don't necessarily leave early to look for another job. They leave early, such as in the Green case, because of a personality conflict with their foreman.
Okay, but let's say in the case of people in Representative Shipwreck's profession, for instance, where they would leave a few days early so they'd get back on the list, and indeed the following week they'd end up back on the back at work because they'd made their move. Does the 5% figure that you're looking at take those people into account, and are they included in your cost estimates here?
No, it does not. We would not see those people.
Okay. We'll have some further discussions about this.
Okay, I think that would be helpful, and I think we should sort of distinguish again in our own minds, although we may adopt both amendments. One deals in terms of a voluntary quit in anticipation of a discharge, and the other is a voluntary quit in anticipation of another job. And we should be able to, hopefully, in other discussions, just work out the figures appropriately. Any other comments or questions from members of the committee about what we're talking about? OK, Okay, if not, thank you, folks. Let me ask if there, no one signed up to testify on this general subject or on any of the amendments. Let me ask if there are any members of the audience or public who do desire an opportunity to testify. Okay, if not, when we do schedule for a work session, we will permit brief testimony in response to the amendments proposed or other information that comes to light at that hearing. So you will have an opportunity if you wish to get on the record. Okay, let's go ahead and close the work session on that, and we'll move on into House Bill 2653, which modifies the circumstances where unemployment comp is paid to part-time employees and the charge that results to an employer as a result thereof. We've got amendments that and some testimony. I believe that the Employment Division is prepared to present. The amendments reflect the efforts of the Legislative Council screening process. But why don't we go ahead and start off with the Employment Division, since no public members have signed up to testify. Mr. Nairn and Ms. Hunter, if you want to come forward.
Does this mean there's another set of amendments coming out? Beyond the draft four.
This is the Legislative Council version. Okay, Council is disturbing at this time. The Legislative Council prepared amendments, which are generally follow as closely as possible, apparently those which were presented originally by the proponents. As those are being distributed, I understand you've got some regular testimony, so why don't you folks go ahead and get started on that.
Mr. Chairman, Ron Nairn, Employment Division. I believe we went over the amendments that have just been distributed. Did we last? I'm kind of confused what we did cover, I guess. But I think we discussed this part of it last time, but then we're instructed to work on a conceptual amendment to go on a retroactive provision.
Okay. I believe that the amendment from Legislative Council deals with the part-time relief question that, and the language that was originally presented in what's termed a draft number 4, April 7th, 1983. And Legislative Council put it in the appropriate form and style. Having had a chance to review that, does that appear to be the appropriate language and the language that you can effectively administer? And then we get onto the retroactive issue in just a moment.
The LC draft looks like it follows, I just now saw it, but it looks like it follows very closely. It does not, it leaves out the specific provision for promulgating rules. I assume that the council felt that we could use the overall authority for that. Since there were a number of purposely loose language in this, we had put that in there so there'd be no question about the adopting rules to implement, but apparently Legislative Council must have felt we already had that authority, so.
I assume that's the case, and we can clearly state that as a matter of committee and legislative intent, if there's any question. But otherwise, the rules the proposed changes give you sufficient guidance in addition to the testimony and the position you've heard as to what it is we are hoping to accomplish.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I feel comfortable with them.
Okay, let me ask if there are questions from any members regarding the amendment. Now, apparently, if not, I assume we're generally on board together. Now, why don't we get into the additional amendment dealing with the charging back or the how you can deal with the problem retroactively that I think a couple people expressed a concern about.
Mr. Chairman, this is rather complex. I asked Lee Russell to come to the table with us to explain this one. I think it does what the committee wanted us to do. But
okay, well, you understand what it is we wanted to do.
I think so.
Okay. Well, let's give it a try, Lee.
Lee Russell, Employment Division. What the proposed amendment section, labeled Section 2 on the April 18th date sheet you have in front of you would allow when the employer receives their tax rate notice later this fall for calendar year 1984, if that tax rate notice included some experience during the four quarters ended, well, any quarter after June 30th of 1982, in other words, the 1984 rate is going to be based on the employer experience for the 3 years ended June 30th of 1983. So this would allow the employer, if they could have had relief under this part-time provision, had it been in effect earlier, they could request us to redetermine their rate for 1984 to exclude the part-time charges subsequent to July 1 of 1982. So one-third of the 1 year of the three-year period could have been relieved of the charges. We would, if we found that was the case, they would have been eligible for the relief based on the information they provided, would recompute their 1984 rate with the charges omitted and assign the rate for 1984 as if the charges were not there. There will be a little bit of a gap starting the 1st of July of this year under the amendment to 657-471. We will start giving the employers the opportunity to be relieved of charges for their part-time employees. And the provision to allow them to request a review of their 1984 rate will take care of most of the other cases. However, there will be a little bit of a gap of some employers would not have had any charges in the July 1, 82 through June 30th of 83 period. So they couldn't get relief in 1984, but when they would do the 1985 tax rates, there could have been some charges in July, August, September of 1983 that they could get relief on. And that point in time, they could see. So there's a 2 years that employers can get this retroactive relief. If they were entitled to the relief in their 1984 rate and didn't request it and come up in 1985, they could not get any relief for that period in 80 for their 85 rates because they had an opportunity to get it in the 84 period.
Representative Johnson.
Is the triggering this the application by the employer for this relief, or does your system allow you to, we haven't gone down this road, but does your system allow you to automatically make that adjustment for all employers who were in this position?
The employer, according to our records, would not indicate whether the employer was in this position or not unless the employer requested it. And our rate notice going out for 84 will include the information to the employer that this relief is possible.
I just wanted to at least explore that area in the event you had that option available to.
We do, you know, there are some situations where we are aware that employers have protested, and of course we don't necessarily track those because there wasn't anything in the law, but if we're aware of them, we'll probably take special pains to let that employer be aware. Now, of course, the emergency clause would not, we put an emergency clause so we could start notifying the employers immediately in July, and that Ron just wanted to know if that'd be a problem for 85, and it would not be a problem for 85. One of the things, once we relieve an employer for benefits during the period ending June 30th of 83, if there's any subsequent benefits paid to that claimant and the claimant still continues on a part-time basis, the employer would not have to take any additional action. It'd be that would be automatic at that stage. Mm-hmm.
Okay, are there any further questions on the amendments? Let me recall, I hope correctly, Mr. Nairn, that as far as a fiscal impact, there is no statement because it was your position or your feeling that the fiscal impact or the effect on the fund is insignificant.
That's correct. The first part of it, this subsection 10, that just simply rearranges employers somewhat. Shouldn't really change the net take.
I think it's...
The second part of it, the retroactive provision, would have some small impact, but I believe it would be quite minimal. The one thing that is different on this draft on April 18th and on the earlier one, we indicated earlier that we couldn't figure out how we could get an emergency clause in there because of the difficulty in getting forms printed quickly enough. But we did, we have figured out a way that we can hand stuff the notices to the employer starting in July and insert just a quick print order that would be a supplemental information sheet to them. So if the committee wanted to, you could put a July 3rd effective date on it, and we could still administer at that point. We figured out a way to do it.
Yeah, I assume as well that the proponents, representatives of different small business groups, others will, through their means also, be informing their people. So hopefully that notice provision, in addition to your good efforts, will be accomplished. Let me ask if there's anyone who is in the audience who wishes to testify on either the amendments or the concept. Okay, I'm assuming that hearing no objections or particular concerns that there are none. Okay.
I'll move the amendment.
Representative Johnson, let's take them one at a time. Representative Johnson moves the amendment first distributed, which is the one prepared by Legislative Council and bears the date April 14th, 1983. This is the basic change which will provide relief for the part-time employer. And then the second amendment that the Vice Chair will be moving deals with a retroactive non-charge provision. Is there any discussion of that or comment on that first amendment? Is there any objection? Amendment's adopted. Representative Johnson moves the amendment dealing with a retroactive change in the charge provision, which is in the April 18th sheet distributed and described by the Employment Division. We will, when we report the bill, assuming a favorable vote, ask Legislative Council to review this language and make the appropriate form and style changes as necessary. And we probably ought to, well, it may not be necessary to have it engrossed. The amendments, I think, will just fall in line on the printed bill, but we'll check that out. Does everyone understand the retroactive provision? Are there any?
Just amend my
yes.
motion to, if engrossing is necessary, authorize it.
Okay. We'll let council make that decision and keep us advised. Any further discussion or comment? Is there any objection to the retroactive non-charge amendment motion of Representative Johnson? Okay. If not, it's adopted. Okay, Representative Johnson moves House Bill 2653 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion or comment? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Hanlon?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Leek?
Aye.
Frigiati?
Aye.
DeBoer?
Aye.
Ford?
Aye.
Gold?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Motion's adopted. House Bill 2653 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Representative Troop will be asked, and I assume that he probably wishes to carry this bill. If there's any change in that, we'll notify the committee, but we'll go ahead and assume that's the case. And our counsel will provide, and as I'm sure Employment Division will provide, whatever assistance he needs in preparing his comments on the floor, if he needs any. Okay, let's take up 2804. I think we can, I think it's ready to move, assuming we have some amendments prepared, and then we'll take our morning break. House Bill 2804, we've got a couple individuals who signed up on it. However, I want to check the status of the amendments first. This was first heard in the last week, and Representative Leek is the prime sponsor, had proposed an amendment which he felt was appropriate, removing in effect the responsibility of contractors, but retaining that responsibility for public agencies to report to the Employment Service job vacancies or openings over which the agency exercises employment control. Let me ask perhaps the individuals who signed up to testify on this. Nellie Fine.
Administrative rules, if that's the vehicle, should be made to exclude those positions which must be filled with certain restrictions. For example, we have about 7,500 students working for us, and we cannot post those with the Employment Division because one has to be a student by law in order to fill the position. Similarly, many of our positions under the State Personnel Division rules are filled from lists of eligibles which have been created by taking examinations. We believe that those positions that are filled from such lists, of course, should not be posted with the Employment Division. Rather, when the examinations are opened, that fact should be made known so that the people can get on the list. And similarly, as Mr. Berger had mentioned, we have the problem of being required by a collective bargaining agreement to rehire from layoff lists to the extent those exist, or from by internal promotion or transfer occasionally when our affirmative action policies and goals are involved. So again, we believe in the open recruiting, those positions which are eligible for open recruiting, we be pleased to post those or use whatever mechanism is directed by the committee, but call your attention to these other things which we believe would simply frustrate people and agencies rather than accomplish the goals of the bill.
Okay, I think we appreciate your statement, and again, I would invite you, as I've invited Mr. Berger, that during the next week in which an amendment may be prepared or some additional guidance for rulemaking that we may contemplate as far as a statement of the intent, we want to make sure the record is pretty clear. Feel free to contact any of the principals just to follow along with that discussion. Any questions or comments? Thank you again, Mr. Lemon. Appreciate it. Anyone else who hasn't signed up who'd like to testify on this bill, 2804? Okay, if not, Representative Leek, I think we'll carry this for, I'd say, estimate a week, but if more time is needed, keep us advised. We will be coming back to it, however. And if for some reason someone needs to make a brief comment at that time on the amendments, we'll allow for that opportunity.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the testimony today. It has been helpful focusing on exactly what we want to do, and we do want to avoid creating problems, administrative problems, unnecessary administrative problems for anyone.
Okay, and thanks also to the Employment Division for coming over and helping us out with that. Okay, the next bill is 2012. This is a bill brought to us by Representative Bennett, I believe, or a concern that he has initially raised with us. We've had one hearing on this already, and which Representative Hill appeared and testified. Now, this was the bill in its original form, which was supplemental benefits. And I just asked members to take a moment to look at it. This was filed apparently in anticipation of the possibility that the federal government might not pass the supplemental unemployment compensation, which they have passed. This bill would have provided another OSU extension. It appears by reason of the federal action that's been taken, this bill is, and the concept for an OSU extension is not going to be necessary. And it's my understanding that what Representative Bennett has proposed to us, and there should be some copies of the amendments distributed to members bearing the date April 14, 1983, is to use this bill, 2012, as a vehicle to provide some change in the work share procedure, which we set up last session, and policy which we adopted, I believe, during the special session. So I will ask Representative Bennett, who can probably speak better than I can on this, obviously, to come forward and just explain it to us, and then we've got some public testimony as well. Representative Bennett, and if you have some folks who want to join you, that'd be fine, too.
Good. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the House Labor Committee, I'm Chuck Bennett. I represent House District 38. I'm here to present amendments to correct an inequity in the existing WorkShare unemployment benefit program. The amendment would delete language restricting eligibility for benefits to individuals employed prior to submission of the WorkShare plan. This change would result in insignificant fiscal impact. The problem is illustrated by a letter, which I believe you have, from my constituent, Gene Brown, who is the personnel director at Brazier Forest Products in Molalla. And Ms. Brown is here with me to answer any questions or to testify herself on the problem that she found. She's responsible for telling employees that they are ineligible for work share benefits simply because the person proposed for the benefit was not hired on the proper date, and which is prior to submission of the work share plan. The program has been operating very successfully since last July when it was passed in special session. And since then, many companies, including the one I work for, by the way, has used the program, but at the same time has undergone changes in personnel. I'd ask that you correct this oversight and pass House Bill 2012 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Thank you.
Okay, I'll ask members to hold questions. Are you on a tight time schedule this morning, Representative Bennett?
Fairly, but
okay,
know,
let's go ahead and take questions of you at this point. Are there, we do have a copy of the amendment. We'll be reviewing the language and making sure it's something the Employment Division can work with. And then we'll have an opportunity for other witnesses.
Mr. Chairman, I would ask that if you have any real technical questions on it, that it be directed either to Mrs. Brown or to the Employment Division, if that's...
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any questions for Representative Bennett? Okay, we appreciate you bringing this issue before us. Ms. Brown?
Yes, I'm Jean Brown, and I am Personnel Director for Brazier Forest Products. First, I would like to say that the WorkShare program is working beautifully, and we're very happy with it, except for one point. We ended up with six employees who were not eligible due to that clause stating they have to work for them 6 months prior to submission of the plan. And when a fellow comes up and says, well, am I eligible yet? And I have to tell him, no, and under the present law, you never will be. That's very disheartening for him. When the fellow next to him is eligible, maybe he was hired a week before him. So he said, well, can't you do something about it? I said, well, I don't know. It's the law. What are you going to do about it? He says, well, can't you try? So I wrote a letter, and not knowing I'd end up here. But to me, it's grossly unfair and discriminatory where this person is penalized, you know, for not being hired on the right date. And my boss says, well, are you going to get it retroactive? I said, hey, I don't know about that. I would try to get it retroactive to his date of eligibility. But I'm not sure you would go for that. But I would like it to be retroactive. Then we would have a truly fair piece of legislation. As it is, it's discriminatory. And I would like to see that changed, where everyone is available for work share eventually. When he's been hired 6 months, then he becomes eligible. if I make myself clear.
Okay, we do have a copy, I think, of your letter that was sent to the Employment Division raising this question. That was your letter back in December.
Yes.
So I think that is in writing the concern that you've expressed here today. Any questions? Let me ask, how many employees do you have?
I have, if the bill had been constructed and enacted correctly, if the language had been right in the first place, I would have had 118. Right now I have 112. And also, some of those are not eligible, I found out later, because we are on a 20% reduction, which is one day, amounting to $35, which is a fifth of their max. Due to the fact that some of those normally work 34 hours a week, they're not eligible, which puts me down the line of eligible employees. I don't know the exact number. Probably 22 or 24 of those 112 possibly were ineligible because of the 2 hours extra they work a week. Because you can't work more than 32 hours on a 20% reduced work week.
If they work 34, they would be
34 hours is ineligible, yeah. Even though that's their normal. I called up the Workshare people and I said, well, some of these people work a normal 34, which would, in essence, be 20% reduction because they would work, a 42-and-a-half-hour week normally. Well, they said yes. Well, then they called me back and said, no, that's not right. I gave you the wrong information. So those people were not eligible. You can only work 32 hours, period, on a 20% reduced work week.
Well, that's kind of another issue.
But
I appreciate
that.
You pointing it out. I think it's something we might ask the Employment Division to perhaps consider as well. And I'm not sure if you want to hold the bill up to give them a chance to work up an amendment for that concern, or if you would prefer, I always hate to say this, if you would prefer to take that issue to the Senate side, assuming we get prompt action on this bill.
So actually there are a couple of inequities that I would like to see.
I would kind of leave that to
Mr. Chairman, I think really at the committee's pleasure, if you feel that this will hold the bill up and your advice is to take it up with the Senate Labor Committee, that'd be fine as well. In the amendments clearly addressing one problem, and I think if you find that we could address that rapidly, I think that would be just fine to address the secondary problem as well.
Okay, Representative Johnson.
Representative Bennett, I have a rather personal interest in this proposal. I helped get it through this process, and we'll also do our best to see that it gets through again to take care of it. I think it's a good program. It's obvious you believe so, which makes me very happy. I think what we should do is look at both the issues and try to deal with them. We'll get it through the system some way.
Okay. Representative Shiprock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to very briefly state that although Brazier Forest Products is not in my district, it's right on the border of it. I wanted to let the committee know and thank Gene Brown, because Brazier has been probably the biggest employer of my wood products people in my district. They've worked through the summer, through the winter, and have remodernized their mill. They export lumber throughout the world, and they're a real example of what this wood products industry can do. And I sure appreciate them coming here and concerned about the employees in the wood products industry, because they're really an example that I wish all wood products companies would look at.
I would like to say something, that we have been on a cutback of one day a week since April 80, I believe. And of course there was no work share then. And we didn't even know about the work share plan until probably October 82. And now we're back on a 5-day week, except for some days in certain departments, which I think is a good sign. very healthy sign.
Representative Johnson.
Can I ask, what reason did your management use the program? I'd be curious about that if you could tell us briefly.
Well, see, we don't pay them for that day off,
okay,
or the day we cut back. And this was a way of helping them get benefits they're not entitled to any other way, because they can't draw a part of their unemployment through the unemployment office.
You're
they can only get 1 week at a time. They can't get 1 day at a time.
The surcharge your management pays, they felt that they must have felt then that it was
worth
the surcharge to pay
yeah.
for.
My boss is very fair, and he wanted his employees to get all that they were entitled to.
Did I just, as long as you're alerted to that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Bravo. Let's, unless there are any other questions, thanks again, Ms. Brown.
You're most welcome. Thank you for the privilege.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Hill, did you wish to make a comment or be recognized at this point? Since this is your bill that we propose to
someone, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Another good purpose to be accomplished. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I just wanted to let the committee know, Mr. Chairman and members, that the substitution is fine with me. The original bill is no longer necessary. I think the substitution addresses a pertinent issue, one which I wasn't aware of until Representative Bennett brought it to my attention. I certainly support his proposal here, and am in. It's fine with me to use this bill as a vehicle for this proposal. Sounds like a good idea, and I'd like to see WorkShare used in more places, especially in my district. I'm not aware of any places in my district where it's being used currently. So,
thank you, Representative Hill. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
Okay, let me ask, are there any questions for Representative Hill? Okay, if not, thank you again. Let me ask the Employment Division, do you folks feel you can respond at this point? Perhaps on both issues, the one having to do with the date as far as when a person was employed, and the second one having to do with this, what may be a glitch. I'm not sure, but how the administrative rules, if there is a problem or something we need to deal with in the statute, or if it's something maybe you can address in the rules, but go ahead and let us know how we can find a solution to that.
Mr. Chairman, Ron Aaron, Employment Division. On the first question, and working with Representative Bennett's office and others, we did help them with the language, and we would have no problem administering this amendment as written. It, as was testified to, it would allow someone after they had their 6 months in to be become an affected employee. The if I recall the testimony when this bill was enacted, there was some concern over the charges to other base year employers, and that was the reason that was put in place. But the I don't believe that would be a dramatic change to other employers. There could be some minimal impact with other base year employers. But beyond that one thing that we would have no problem at all administering it. The administration of it has been, I think, pretty straightforward for both us and for the employer community.
Do you have any comments then on the 80% issue that she brought up at this time? Would you want to think about that a bit? But it would seem had I understood what she was saying, it would have seemed that would have been appropriate if it would have been 80%.
Donna was looking for the information on that while the testimony is taking place. I'll let her respond to it.
Hey, Representative Johnson, in the law itself, it says that we can pay an individual if the person's normal hours are reduced in an accordance with an approved plan. That would be at least 20%, but not more than 40%, and that a person is disqualified from benefits for any week in which the work is performed in excess of the reduced hours as set forth in the plan. So there has to be an actual.
That was administratively.
Pardon?
That was an administrative problem then as it relates to this rather than a statute that said there was a problem with it. They just didn't have in the plan that 34 and a half hours was
or 34 hours was 80% of
If I understand the case, I have written down the name of the company and the lady, and I will look into the specifics later.
If there was a miscommunication, say, between your folks and the preparation of the plan and Ms. Brown, if I'm understanding your understanding of the situation, that may be what had occurred, and I think as Representative Johnson pointed out, it does need a statutory, there's no need for a statutory change.
I don't believe so at this time, and if a person has a 40, an employer has, for instance, a 40% plan in place, they can modify it by telephone call to be a 30% plan or a 20% plan, followed up by paper. We've tried to really make it as simple as we can.
Okay, well, I'm going to, I think because we, if we can, if members feel we can take action on the bill today, I would like to go ahead and report it today. If it turns out that your understanding is incorrect or you do need something, you can notify us, and I suppose we can then make the decision to bring the bill back to committee, or we can talk about maybe go to the Senate side, make sure we have an understanding over there if that's going to be necessary. But I would, if we can, take action today. Mr. Frederick has also signed up to testify.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Carl Frederick, I'm the staff of Associated Oregon Industries. I'm pleased to say that we are very much in support with the proposed amendments to House Bill 2012. The program has worked extremely well. I think their participation has been something like 140 to 150 employers throughout the state. Nothing but positive feedback from the program itself, and I think opening up this little window, correcting this little problem, would not do violence to the program, would improve it, and again, we are very supportive of it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Frederick. I appreciate that. Before I take a motion on the amendment, I've got two different versions. The only change, apparently, is on line 9. There's deletion of a couple words after the word individual. And that deletion, I'm not sure if the Employment Division suggested that deletion, but one marked copy I have deletes the two words, who was. Can you tell us what that's about, or? Sorry to bring you back. I should have noted that before I let you get away the first time.
Do you want me to?
There were just a couple of things that need to be checked on. Mr. Chairman, Ron Nairn, Employment Division. There were just a couple of things I think that perhaps council would want to check on with the legislative council for form and style. On the who was that appears on line 9, I don't think that's a particular problem. It just seemed like it would read a little bit smoother if that was not there, but that's certainly not fatal in any way. I think on line 7, the reference to sections 8 to 12 of this 1982 Act might be a more proper citation to cite as sections 8 to 12, chapter 2, Oregon laws, 1982. And the same reference perhaps on line 22. But there are technical things that, you know, the legislative council could clarify which one is proper. And then the who was on line 9 is not important.
Okay.
I would move the bill with the on line 9 and check with legislative council for form and style.
Okay, Representative Johnson moves the amendments from legislative council bearing the identification House Bill 2012-1 and the date April 14, 1983, as further amended on line 9 to delete after the word individual the two words who was, and also with a direction to legislative council that if the referral to the 1982 Act can be stated more precisely by chapter and session designation, that it be done so. That would apply also to line 22. Is there any further discussion of the amendment as amended? Is there any objection to the amendment? Not, it's adopted. Okay, Representative Johnson moves House Bill 2012 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Any further comment or discussion? Anyone out there? And if not, the clerk will call the roll.
Johnson?
Aye.
Lee?
Aye.
Shubrack?
Aye.
Rajati? DeVore?
Aye.
Ford?
Aye.
Gold?
Aye.
Hanlon?
Aye.
Trigger?
Aye. Representative Brugiati should be shown as excused. The motion is adopted. The bill is to the floor. Do pass recommendation as amended. Let me ask Representative Bennett or Representative Hill, either one of you gentlemen or jointly, why don't you let me know who would prefer to carry the bill, and we'd allow you that right of first refusal, if you will. And just let us know, and we'll be glad to provide whatever assistance. And thank you again. To the extent that this other issue, if it does need some resolution after your discussions, please get back to us and we'll take whatever steps are appropriate.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Okay, so far so good. 2908. Let's see what we have here. No one has signed up to testify on this. This was at the request of the Employment Appeals Board. It's my understanding that some amendments may be in order. However, let me ask the proponent, Mr. O'Connor, could you maybe come forward briefly and just let us know where we stand on this? I had thought that there might be other witnesses. If there are others who haven't signed up out there in the audience, if you could raise your hand and let me know if you're present. If not, not seen any. Mr. O'Connor, why don't you just tell us kind of where we're at, and if I understand, maybe you request to carry this over to another work session.
Yes. Tom O'Connell, staff of the Employment Appeals Board.
Pardon me, Mr. O'Connell. Excuse me. Go ahead.
We would request that the matter be set over to allow us to attempt to reach an agreement with other agencies regarding some concerns they have about this bill.
Okay. What's a reasonable time? A couple weeks?
Yes, that would be fine.
Okay. Let me, I don't know if members have any questions at this point. Let's get those out there if we do.
I just need someone, because I will be going over this before you get back. Section 8 of the bill on page 3, where it says in the event of vacancy or absence required by the workload, the governor may appoint a pro temporary member. I guess, would you explain the reasoning behind that portion of the bill?
As matters now stand, the three board members, if any one of them may become ill or have to leave the area for some purpose, then there's no provision for replacing them temporarily with someone else so business can continue. They continually are reading transcripts, and they meet every other week to deliberate those cases. And it's an ongoing 12-month-a-year thing.
Okay.
Hey, Representative Hanlon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. O'Connell, when this comes back before us, can I also ask that you bring the budget of the EAB back with it so that we'll know what we're talking about?
Yes.
The support documents. Thank you.
Okay, I think to point out to members, one of the changes that is presented, I'm not sure if this is the subject of discussions or not, you don't need to respond, but apparently one of the changes has to do with lengthening the time period or the deadline in which an order or decision would be due from 30 days to 60 days.
That's in the bill as it is drafted, but it is one of those matters that we intend to discuss and reach some agreement.
Okay, that may be the subject of amendment as well. Okay, I just want to make sure folks are on notice, particularly the interested parties, and I assume that you're touching bases with those who may have an objection or concern, and feel free to work with our counsel if necessary for any assistance in preparing those amendments.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions or comments? Once again, is there anyone in the public who wish to testify in 2908 at this time? We'll be bringing it back in approximately 2 weeks for a work session, and those parties who do have an interest can contact either Mr. O'Connell or committee counsel to make sure that they're kept up to speed as to any amendments that may be in the works. Anything else? Any other business? If not, we're adjourned.